Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy. Welcome to this week's Down to Agribusiness podcast once again. Delighted to be joined by Phelim O'Neill and Anne Finnegan from the team. Phelim, I get the sense that you're a little bit cross over this PGI status and what has happened and the fact that Northern Ireland have blocked the Republic's ambition for the PGI. Talk to me. Give me a little bit of background now for those that don't know where this story has come from.
Okay, Jack. Well, I suppose I would change the word blocked there. It's not just as it sounds. They've launched an objection procedure, which is a technical term that's given to the EU process for making your point, essentially. Look, the backstory here is a PGI was prepared back in 2020 by Bord Bia, who had done the legwork, done the consultation with the sector and defined the standard, and were ready to make the application in late 2020, when the North put the flag up through the Livestock and Meat Commission, who are a similar body to Bord Bia up there, that they wanted to be part of this too. And that then led to a little bit of to and froing. They wanted to join the application, but the Irish government, who makes the application on behalf of the Irish industry, decided, look, we're going to go ahead with this, and but we would welcome Northern Ireland joining the process later on. Now, the trouble is, it's not just as simple as pushing on Republic of Ireland, getting an application approved, and then bolting the North on subsequently. To do that essentially would involve a major review, which is essentially a new application. So the process went ahead anyway in late 2020. In May 2021, the EU came back and advised that Northern Ireland should make what they called a constructive opposition to this, that they would, and it was to be viewed as non-hostile. That and essentially what that meant was that the EU was saying, look, to bring Northern Ireland in on this, as everybody wanted to do, you essentially need to go back to the start and go forward with a joint application. That's where we are now, almost halfway through 2022. And look, I've no doubt we'll get there, probably before the end of the year. But the reality is that this has added 18 months to a process that could have been done and dusted at this stage. Now, the North wasn't clear either. They hadn't their grass-fed standard ready. There's no point to ask starting a blame game at this stage, because despite everything, there's still great North-South goodwill there at a political and at an official level as well. So we don't want to destroy that.
So, I mean, you're confident that it'll still happen and that we just have to suck up the last couple of years in terms of this proposal that has been in Phelim. Like you're suggesting that it's just a time piece. Like
I have the heading that I've done an online piece just to follow up on what Amy was writing in the print edition of the paper, and I've titled it just the scenic route for the PGA application, and that's essentially what it is. There was a shorter route that could have been taken, maybe should have been taken, but by not having went down that road of a joint application, we have now got to the point where we are having to, if you like, go back stay. It's a bit like the game of snakes and ladders. We have hit a snake here. We have to go back down, but we can still get to the end. And we'll do, I'm confident, either by the end of this year or indeed, worst case, early next year.
And just in terms of the PGI, Phelim, like, I mean, what does that mean then? That will the product, as in beef, be marketed then from GB, Ireland and Northern Ireland together under the one brand, or what does the status mean?
Just to be very clear there, there's no Britain element to this. It's very much a PGI for the island of Ireland. It's already secured, by the way, for Irish whiskey and Irish cream liqueurs. Your Bailey's Cream, for example, qualifies as an Irish drink, although it's manufactured, the process combines both sides of the border. So it is an island of Ireland projection job. This is basically essentially PGIs are not that common in Ireland. They're very common in continental Europe, particularly in France and Italy, amongst cheeses, etc., various dairy products, various speciality foods, if you like. And we have in the case of Irish beef, then, if we're going both sides of the border with it, then it's the island of Ireland. It allows us to have a brand, if you like, that we can put government money behind. You know, there's very strict rules in state aids in terms of using levy monies and using government funding to promote. You just can't go out and produce promote Irish beef just or Irish dairy at the drop of a hat. But if you have a PGI brand, you're allowed to invest in that promotion. Now, it is a brand. It captures, if you like, the essence of what Irish beef to be. But look, Jack, building a brand is not an overnight job. It's something that will take years, if not decades. And even then, there's no guarantee of success. But look, if you don't try, you definitely don't succeed.
Waterford Blair, I think, is another PGI piece that we have here in Ireland.
We have Connemara lamb as well. We also have Bramley apples up north in County Armagh, Comber early seed potatoes. You know, we have a few of them, but none of them are household names, I think it's fair to say.
And vegetable oil is used to make a lot of these food products that we're talking about, or to cook them, or to in the process. I mean, I see there's issues there in terms of vegetable oils, in terms of availability. Is it just talk to me on that vegetable oil piece?
Yeah, well, I suppose first of all, we've talked before about the impact of the war in Ukraine, and obviously Ukraine and Russia are major suppliers, major exporters, and the leading exporters of sunflower oil onto the world market. So the war has brought about, you know, a constraint and a concern about further availability of sunflower oil. But this week, or I should say last Friday, Indonesia, which is the world's largest exporter of palm oil, introduced what was initially thought to be a blanket ban on exports of palm oil to take effect from this Thursday. They've since clarified that it's crude palm oil is going to be excluded. So it's only the processed oil. And this is really to contain escalating costs in food prices in Indonesia. So it drove vegetable oils markets mad over the past number of days. They have come back a bit on hearing that crude oil has been excluded for now. And I suppose India is a huge importer of crude palm oil from Indonesia. So there was major concern in the Indian market. But I suppose it's pointing to a wider issue. Like back in March, we were starting to hear about cooking oil, you know, being restricted in Europe to one and two bottles per consumers. We heard it in Germany, Portugal, Spain. Last week, we're seeing similar moves in the UK. Tesco's have moved in the UK last week, limiting customers to three bottles of oil. Morrison's and Waitrose have brought in similar curtailments and similar rationing. So I mean, look, for us here in Ireland, for consumers in Ireland, and for food manufacturers in Ireland, it is an important development, because it's not only about the bottle of cooking oil on the shelf. A huge range of food products are manufactured with vegetable oil, either sunflower oil or palm oil in the main. It's very difficult to pick up a manufactured food product that doesn't include some form of vegetable oil. So it does have implications for food prices. And as we're seeing, there's concerns that it's going to have impacts on availability of the oil in its own self for retail customers, but potentially for manufacturers. I think it's one to watch. And obviously it has implications, Jack, as well. I know you're looking at the dairy processors at the moment. It has implications for the butter market as well, because while it's not a simple switch, depending on the economics, they do interchange the vegetable fats and the butter fats.
So it could underpin the butter market even further, kind of, is where you're coming at. Like, definitely. I mean, I was down in Carberry this week, and we had the annual results in the paper, and I talked to Jason, the CEO, Jason Hawkins, the CEO of Carberry, a little bit about food inflation, and, you know, has it really taken an impact yet? I mean, we've talked about this before on this show, you know, in terms of food inflation and when actually the consumer is going to get hit with this I'm talking around the piece that you're talking about, I suppose, in terms of oil and the availability issue and the price going up because the alternatives are not there, etc., and that kind of thing. And he was of the opinion, Anne, that really it hasn't hit home yet for the consumer, that it's still in the post, that the retailers haven't, like, he will say that, listen, fertilizer cost has gone up on farm, you know, equivalent of maybe seven cents a litre, 8 cents a litre. Processing cost has gone up because of energy prices up again, gas up, maybe he would say 3 cents a litre for kind of on an annual basis. So he's saying, we're lucky enough that we're able to get it back from the dairy commodity markets. That lift in cost has been returned in terms of commodity prices at global level have gone up, and hence they can get it back and hence return the milk price piece. But he is saying that at retailer level, he says he hasn't seen yet the kind of food inflation piece really impact on the shop shelf, and that it might be another couple of months, but then he reckoned that maybe the retailers will all move together to kind of pass back that food inflation piece. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, typically there, you know, we've always seen a lag in the market. Mm. I suppose that the key point for farmers is that the commodity markets are delivering to support the increased input prices. And I suppose that is key. I think some farmers will say, well, they're just not delivering enough and across some sectors. But there is always a lag. I suppose my concern about the retail shelf is, you know, and we talked about this again before, you know, we're coming into low demand for energy in terms of heating, electricity. So household bills will moderate, you would imagine, to some degree, on the basis that we have a mild summer and whatnot and a good weather pattern. But, you know, getting in ahead of those energy price pinches, let's say, in autumn and winter for the consumer, I think are going to be key, because it's going to be very challenging for the consumer who's just going to see their income eroded further. And there's a lot you would sense that's going to bite next winter. And look, today we had the news of Russia pulling gas from Bulgaria and Poland, you know, on the basis of this issue over it not being paid for in rubles as they've determined it now needs to be. So that's only the start. I mean, if that continues into Germany, into Italy, you know, again, this is the time of year they'll be filling the gas storage. And so it all has implications.
No, it does. And we had a chat with Jason again about that piece. And I suppose his thoughts, he was saying, roughly the numbers, about a third of his electricity usage is, a third of his energy usage is electricity. And about 80% is actually 80% of that third is generated by their own anaerobic digestion and a few other pieces around. So it can't regenerate their own energy for that. But obviously the other two thirds is gas. And like everyone else, I mean, he and all the other processors are vulnerable to availability and price and can do so much in the market, you know. But he was saying, Anne, in terms of the investment piece going forward for Carberry, because like they have done a lot of investment now and debt levels are as high as they've ever been in Carberry. I think it's something like 80 million, go back 5 years ago to something like 12 million, you know. So they have invested in the mozzarella plant and the new mozzarella plant down there. And they've invested in obviously acquisitions like, you know, Innova, their acquisition last year in May 2021. So in the taste and flavors division. But he was suggesting that if he's going to spend money now in 22 or 23, it's going to be in energy and it's going to be in green energy and it's going to be in solar or anaerobic digestion or some other plays around that space. Like he would see that, listen, I have my processing piece done for kind of where we are at the moment and have capacity. We have the taste and flavors piece going okay. But the next investments and whatever money we're going to spend now would be on kind of green energy. I mean, is it fair to say, Anne, that's probably high on the agenda for a lot of processors, whether it's dairy processors, meat processors, is that fair to say that this green energy piece is where they're going to be investing in the next couple of years?
I would imagine it has to be a big focus for them. I mean, if you leave where the energy market is aside and look at it just purely from an emissions perspective, the pressure from investors, whether be they, you know, in PLCs, be they yes. institutional investors, be that from the banking system and financial investors, and then from, you know, from the consumer or from the retailers right through the food chain, there is going to be huge pressure to reduce emissions within their own business, first of all. And obviously then the scope three emissions, the context of the food manufacturing sector, will bring it back down to farm level. So you would imagine that that piece certainly has to drive the emissions reduction and an investment in the in their business in emissions reduction and sustainability, yeah. a whole range of sustainability measures. But obviously, in the world that we're in now, look, those investments seem to make more sense. And leaving the war aside, I heard an analyst, an energy market analyst from mainland Europe speak a couple of months ago who talked about, you know, look, the energy transition and, you know, the inclusion of natural gas into the taxonomy as a transitional fuel. So as we start to dial down oil and fossil fuels and solid fuels, gas will play a bigger role. And demand for gas will increase, not just in Europe, but we're even seeing the demand in China for LNG. Last year, Russia sent or, you know, redirected huge quantities of LNG to China, and they're dialing down their coal usage. So, you know, to some degree, you would have to imagine that that's going to strengthen natural gas prices, that the prices that we've been accustomed to heretofore probably won't be the prices that we'll see into the future. It doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be at the high prices that we're seeing now, and certainly the peaks that they've gone to in this volatility. But you would certainly imagine that it, the natural gas in the future will trade at a higher level than where it's come from.
No, you're right. And you're right to call out the kind of, I call it the decarbonisation of the energy from an emissions and sustainability perspective, even, as you say, as separate to the cost of it and the price piece that's happening there at the moment as well, because that was the point that Jason was dialing up as well, because, you know, they have a plan to in their processing sites to be net carbon zero for 2035. You know, so they have a job of work on to there, and that as you say, that is part of that investment play that's going to happen on the processing sites. Phelan, we've talked before about the gas required in meat processing facilities. Like, I mean, is it obviously it's not to the same extent. We're driving a lot of water out of milk in the dairy processing side of things, and that creates great heat and whatever. But on the meat processing side of things, was there chat of availability issues as well, and something like that in terms of, you know, the preparation of carcasses, etc. Is that an issue, or have you heard on recently?
Not quite as hungry. Meat processing industry, certainly in beef, isn't quite as hungry at primary processing level anyway for gases. Although it does come into play when you go into the retail packing, etc. It gets into stage that side. It's also, as you identify, not as energy hungry either, apart from the cold storage side of it. And there's things that at minute with currently very, very high beef prices, there's very little beef going into frozen cold stores right now. It's going out fresh as fresh product. So they're probably a lot less exposed than many other sectors of the agri-food industry, Jack.
I'll leave you on this one, folks. I was just doing a piece there in terms of the milk supply piece, and so we're back 3 or 4%, like, you know, depending on what processor you're talking about. Lakeland are actually up year on year, but all the rest of them, Glanbia, Dairy Gold, etc., are all back in terms of milk supply. And like, there's no weather reason, or there's no cow numbers reason, so it must be related to that whole space around kind of the cost of feed and the cost of fertilizer and what has happened there. I mean, are you picking up any vibes that, you know, in terms of the farmer piece, either on the finance side or on the kind of using side, you know, in terms of that, listen, there's a big pullback in terms of inputs and where what's going to happen in 2022 will be very different to 2021.
The biggest difference on the meat processing side, anyway, is that there's been cows are being culled an awful lot sharper coming out of the parlour. The there's much less of an inclination to feed cows on, as might be the case in other years when there will be the peak flush of spring grass. So that, I think, tends to suggest that grass volumes across the piece are back, and that would probably explain maybe less milk coming in through the system as well. So I think that's a reality that we'll have to be prepared for in 2022, that we can see a further reduction, if you like, in volumes in terms of last year, because the cattle are being killed now, that will come out of the system. We're projected to have higher numbers this year overall, but they're being more front loaded than they might have been than they were originally planned to be.
Yeah, I mean, and up your part of the country, up in Donegal, like, I mean, again, it's probably a little bit later in the season than, like, we're still only in April, you know. I mean, it's still relatively early in the year, but I mean, you'd be getting a feel for it kind of in terms of what the weather in the northwest probably has been poorer for milk supply than down south, like we'll say. So it's probably back even another little bit up around your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I would say so, Jack. And grass has been slow as well. So I would imagine it's held back a bit. I mean, obviously in this part of the country as well, you've got quite a number of high input producers who I imagine will be feeling the impact of higher feed prices as well. There's probably more feed going into the system, and that will possibly moderate them somewhat as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it's a relatively small piece in the overall scheme of things, you know, and it's only April yet. But I mean, I think that to an extent, we've reached peak milk in the country, and the processors are probably going to see less milk, you know, going forward. For the last number of years, like, they've had just, you know, more milk, more supply was going up and up and up, revenues were going up and up and up, turnovers were going up and up and up. And now, you know, I think it's the first indication that there's a kind of there's a change in the wind.
Yeah, and it's probably a sign of the times as well. And when you talk back to what you mentioned about Carberry and where their investment is, look, there's work to be done in the sector around all of that piece, and that's going to be a focus, you imagine, for a period of time now as well.
Yeah, very striking that Carberry has results that stand favourable in comparison with any of the much bigger ones with bigger milk pools. So it shows you what diversification can actually deliver when it comes to it.
Sure, it can, Phelan. No, you're right to call it out. Like, I mean, like, they've an EBITDA there of something like 50-odd million, you know, and some of the bigger processes with kind of 4 and 5 times their milk supply are only getting an EBITDA around that, you know. So the Carberry piece in terms of the innovation, in terms of getting involved in the flavours and the taste side of the business, like, and, you know, a separate business completely from the dairy business, you know, but it really has paid dividends down through the years and still continues to pay dividends to that cohort of some milk suppliers down in West Cork. Yeah, so it is... yeah, definitely. It's a big call out. Like, you know, that big doesn't always necessarily mean better, you know, in terms of you can do stuff at scale and an investment at scale that, you know, that's outside of the business, the core business, but that can still deliver back to farmers. And of course, the running piece and the running question is, like, you know, how much it is actually delivered back. And I mean, there's talks of 1, 2, and 3 cents a litre coming back from that synergy business to the milk suppliers in West Cork, you know, because which is quite significant in the overall scheme of things. But the piece for Carberry last year was that cheddar was actually slow to kind of react to the kind of market dynamics that was at play. So they were second division players last year in terms of the milk price piece, and they topped up towards the end of the year as cheddar came back up in price. But yeah, no, definitely, Phelan, the outside business is still contributing to the overall Carberry Group performance, and it's still very positive. Folks, we could talk for a lot longer, but I'm going to wrap it there at that. There's lots more in the journal on a lot of these stories, so pick up your copy, and we'll talk to you again next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.